You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Wow. Michelle Bachmann, is she channeling Joe McCarthy? Or is there a real threat represented by the fact that the woman who is the assistant chief of staff to Hillary Clinton, our Secretary of State, and also the Huma is also Huma Abedin, and also the wife of former Congressman Anthony Weiner, that her father, who is now dead, was friends with somebody who was part of an organization that was affiliated with somebody who had apparently some ties to somebody that was associated with a group that was known to be affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood. And given all that, the Muslim Brotherhood right now is like, you know, their candidate just won the presidency of Egypt. I think they're our allies. I'm more concerned, frankly, with Paul Ryan. You know, the Swiss banks were big handlers of Nazi money during World War II, and there's still a lot of Nazis out there. Two of Paul Ryan's top 20 contributors are not even American corporations. They're Swiss banks. Is Paul Ryan a secret Nazi? Let's find out. Ryan Morrow is with us. He is a national security analyst with RadicalIslam.org. RadicalIslam.org. Well, I just said it. That's the website. Hey, Ryan, what's up?
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So, do we have more to worry about Huma being a secret? Well, she's not a secret Muslim. A secret Muslim daughter of father who's a friend of somebody who once knew somebody that became a terrorist? Or do we have more to worry about Paul Ryan getting money from banks that bankrolled Hitler?
Well, first of all, this accusation about the Muslim Brotherhood operating in the United States in general is proven. We know that from the Muslim Brotherhood's own documents. We've arrested Brotherhood agents that have worked with the federal government in the past. So there is precedent for this. Now, the question that Michelle Bachmann and the others were asking was how Huma Abedin was able to get a security clearance when three of her close relatives are tied to the Muslim Brotherhood, with her mother actually being a senior leader in the Muslim Sisterhood, which is the counterpart to the Muslim Brotherhood.
The humanity.
We believe that the Muslim Brotherhood is a very insidious organization.
I am so frightened.
What she's not saying is that she's a terrorist or necessarily a Muslim Brotherhood agent, but these type of family ties are taken into account in the security clearance process.
Huma went through to become the number two person to the Secretary of State, you have to go through a substantial background check. But even beyond that, we had last year 3,500 Americans died from food poisoning. I mean, we lose more people every year to gun violence. We lose more people every year to food poisoning. We lose 10 times more people every year to drunk drivers than we've lost in the worst year in the last three decades to terrorists. I don't understand why you guys are so frantic and paranoid and panicked about, you know, even Muslims who hate us, because they're not particularly effective at us. I mean, when the IRA was going after the British and blowing up bombs in London every two or three weeks, almost killed Maggie Thatcher. They blew up the building right next to her. The response of England was not, oh, no, we're going to be afraid. The response was, let's sit down and negotiate with these people. The IRA is now a political party in Parliament.
Well, first of all, you can't negotiate with the Muslim Brotherhood when, by their own documents, that's written in their own documents is the destruction of Western civilization from within.
Their
work in the United States.
And the IRA's goal was ending Protestant Christianity. Even if what you're saying is true, are you really that frightened of these people?
I don't believe that they're going to hijack the U.S. government and conquer us, but I think that's enough.
Then what are you afraid of?
Absolutely. Look, do you believe that hateful ideologies and ideologies like this need to be countered? I absolutely do.
It's one of the reasons why I think that, you know, when Mitt Romney came out and said that Barack Obama was behaving like a foreigner, you know, you and I both know that's dog whistle for, you know, hey, he doesn't look like, somebody who should be in the White House. I think that hateful ideologies have been very destructive in this country. They're, you know, we have a long history of lynchings and murders and just a couple of days ago there was a lesbian
homegrown
woman who was carved up with a guy.
Brotherhood ideology.
I beg your pardon?
And homegrown Islamic terrorism grows from the Muslim Brotherhood ideology.
I am not afraid of them.
Well, you may not, but you should definitely be concerned enough about them to want to combat them and be concerned with someone who has three relatives that work with them that's in the State Department. She may be a perfectly fine lady, but it's perfectly legitimate to say, I want to know if
this
is taken into account in the security process.
No, it's not. This is dog whistle politics. This is all about Barack Obama having a funny name that Hussein is in the middle of, being the black guy in the White House.
That's not
and how can
all,
we paint him with
Obama
anything... Yeah, well, you know, he works for her Secretary of State. She works for his Secretary of State.
And you know what? Those same type of Muslim Brotherhood tied organizations also operated under the Bush administration. So it's not about accusing...
What is your worst fear, Ryan? You know, obviously this keeps you up in the middle of the night. What is it that wakes you up in the middle of the night?
I would say Islamists taking over the Middle East, critical regions overseas, and...
Islamists already run the Middle East.
...here in the United States.
Are you familiar with Saudi Arabia?
Yes. That's actually
That's ground central for Wahhabism. They're our ally. We put them into power. We've been supporting them since 1931.
Right, and that is a huge problem, and I think that's good that you raise that. But keep in mind that the Saudis and the Muslim Brotherhood are tied at the hip, and that they set up the Muslim World League, and that's the organization
that Saudis are sitting on.
So when you raise the issue of Saudi sponsorship of radical Islam, you are talking about the very issue that Michelle Bachmann has raised.
No, I'm not. Michelle Bachmann has raised is there might be something funny going on inside that Hussein Obama administration.
She never said that. Listen,
I know dog whistle politics when I hear it.
Give me a quote where Michelle Bachmann said Barack Obama is a Muslim or a secret Muslim or something like that.
That's why it's called dog whistle politics, because you don't say it out loud. You just do like Ronald Reagan did in 1980 after he got nominated to be the Republican candidate for president. The first speech he ever gave as the official Republican candidate for president was in a little town of 6,000 people. Now, why would he go to a little town of 6,000 people? Nearest airport is hours away. Why would he go to that little town? Because that little town was Philadelphia, Mississippi, where in 1964, three civil rights workers were murdered by the KKK. It's the only thing it's famous for. And what was his speech about?
His speech was about states'
rights.
You're accusing Michelle Bachmann of.
I am suggesting that Michelle Bachmann and Mitt Romney and the entire large chunks of the Republican machine this year have decided nakedly that the only way they can win, they can't talk about the economy, they can't talk about policy, that what they have to do is talk about Obama is different, he's foreign, he's weird. Hey, have you noticed he's African American? His dad was a Muslim. He's a secret Muslim.
The race card on Barack Obama. They have never once said, "Oh, well, he's black, and you should vote against him for that." You're playing
a dog whistle.
You jump inside their minds, and you say that they have racist motivations. You should prove that right now.
I do say that. I am absolutely asserting that. And for the record, I don't stay up at night worrying about Muslims. I mean, they did their best on 9/11, and they still didn't kill as many of us as food poisoning kills every year. I don't understand why you guys are so frightened.
That was Al-Qaeda's best.
I beg your pardon?
That was Al-Qaeda's best. And by the way, you said you're not worried about
Al-Qaeda grew out of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Muslims either. I'm worried about the Islamists, the extremist element that need to be fought with Muslims who don't believe in that type of ideology.
If you fight them, you feed them.
That's not necessarily true. I don't believe that.
The best way to beat these people is to laugh at them.
You can mock them, but you have to counter the ideology. You have to support those that stand against them. And
How do you counter Islam's a phony religion? Is that your counter?
Islam? No, I would not. I am not attacking Islam as a whole.
All right. I think we've gone through this. Ryan Morrow, radicalislam.org is the website, national security analyst. Ryan, thanks for dropping by today.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. So, what do you think? I'll share some more of my thoughts on this right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Poor Huma, you know? I mean, she had finally gotten her life together. Her husband has resigned from Congress. She just had a baby, and now this? Really? Ah, there's that dog whistle. Actually, that's a human whistle. You can hear it. You know, the Mitt Romney campaign has a shiny new tool, a dog whistle, and it's not to get Seamus off the roof of Romney's car. In recent days, Romney and his surrogates have taken a hammering the president, not over jobs or the economy, but instead over his otherness or his foreign life as a child. Just yesterday, here was Romney hinting that President Obama is foreign and not in line with American experience. Listen particularly carefully to the very last word he says. It's kind of buried by the audience applause, but I'll tell you, the word is foreign. Just listen.
In the past, people of both parties understood that encouraging achievement, encouraging success, encouraging people to lift themselves as high as they can, encouraging entrepreneurs, celebrating success instead of attacking it and denigrating makes America strong. That's the right course for this country. His course is extraordinarily foreign.
His course is extraordinarily foreign. And that, I mean, he was reading that off the prompter, right? This is very intentional. And here was Romney last week saying pretty much the same thing. No, I'm sorry. Here's John Sununu, Romney's surrogate, John Sununu, talking about the president being a foreigner.
He has no idea how the American system functions, and we shouldn't be surprised about that, because he spent his early years in Hawaii smoking something, spent the next set of years in Indonesia.
Yeah, this is called dog whistle politics. Just like most people can't hear a high-pitched dog whistle, but dogs can. Average Americans don't see and hear things like you just saw as appeals to racists. But the racists themselves, they hear it loud and clear. Other than whack jobs like David Duke, politicians generally don't just come right out and say what their extreme base, the racists, the hateful, the mentally twisted sickos among us. Politicians just can't come out and say what these idiots want to hear. They can't just suck up to the racists by throwing out the lie that black people are lazy, or suck up to religious bigots by saying that all Muslims are terrorists, or suck up to the paranoid homophobes by saying that gays are pedophiles. So instead they talk in code, the Republican dog whistle. Sure, saying that President Obama's policies are foreign might sound benign to the general electorate, but to a much smaller, targeted group of individuals like the Tea Party, far right, Fox so-called news viewers, basically, the crazies who actually think the president was born in Kenya, yes, that's a majority of people who watch Fox News, or who are uncomfortable with a black man in the White House, characterizing the president as foreign, has a very clear meaning. It's the Republican dog whistle. And Mitt Romney isn't at all afraid to get in the mud with these whack jobs and tell them what they want to hear, albeit in code, because the paranoids, the racists, and the bigots actually show up to vote. Our nation has a long history of Republican dog whistle politics. Richard Nixon proudly called it his Southern strategy to win the White House in the 1960s, playing to the fears of racists in the South who were angry about LBJ signing civil rights and voting rights laws. And the Reagan campaign was brilliant at it. They had Reagan kick off his presidential campaign in 1980 by going to the small town of Philadelphia, Mississippi, a town that was only famous for one thing: the Ku Klux Klan's murder of three civil rights workers who were registering African Americans to vote back in 1964. So when Ronald Reagan gave a speech there talking about states' rights, those racists knew exactly what he was talking about. States' rights has been an argument used to perpetuate slavery and racism since this country was founded. And it worked for Reagan, too. He won the South, and because of that, he took the presidency in 1980. The Republican dog whistle was dusted off again in 1988, used by George H.W. Bush to defeat Michael Dukakis. Here's the infamous Willie Horton ad run against Dukakis that year.
Bush and Dukakis on crime. Bush supports the death penalty for first-degree murderers. Dukakis not only opposes the death penalty, he allowed first-degree murderers to have weekend passes from prison. One was Willie Horton, who murdered a boy in a robbery, stabbing him 19 times. Despite a life sentence, Horton received 10 weekend passes from prison. Horton fled, kidnapped a young couple, stabbing the man and repeatedly raping his girlfriend. Weekend prison passes. Dukakis on crime.
Now, to the general public, the ad is hitting Dukakis' soft on crime, which is pretty ironic, since it was Dukakis' Republican predecessor who changed the law to let Willie Horton get out of jail, and Dukakis who ended the practice long before the election. But even though the ad was a lie, to the Republican racists, the dog whistle was loud and clear. If you want to vote white, then vote Republican. The racists turned out, Bush beat Dukakis. And even though it's getting pretty obvious and sometimes even embarrassing, when John McCain, for example, corrected a woman in the audience who said that Obama was an Arab, remember that? Republicans still always fall back on dog whistle politics when things are tight. Sarah Palin used it in 2008 when she talked about President Obama palling around with terrorists. She used it again in 2011 after the Tucson massacre when she accused the media of blood libel, a dog whistle term that has very clear meaning to anti-Semites. And just this year, Newt Gingrich blew the Republican dog whistle in South Carolina by telling the racists in that state that President Obama was the food stamp president and suggesting that certain lazy people should get a job.
You recently said black Americans should demand jobs, not food stamps. You also said poor kids lack a strong work ethic and proposed having them work as janitors in their schools. Can't you see that this is viewed at a minimum as insulting to all Americans, but particularly to black Americans?
No, I don't see that.
Yeah, and it worked for Gingrich. He won the state. And so now Mitt Romney is blowing the Republican dog whistle. No surprise there. Republicans so love this stuff that Michelle Bachmann, once a serious Republican contender for the presidency, is out there hustling this paranoid theory that the deputy chief of staff to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is a secret agent of the Muslim Brotherhood. Bachmann's gotten four of the Republican members of Congress to pick up the dog whistle, too, and call for an investigation into the State Department. And since the camera hasn't been turned on him for a few weeks, Republican Newt Gingrich ran to Bachmann's defense and asked the State Department, you know, what's the State Department hiding? I'm just going to blow through this. Gingrich is helping promote this insane theory. I'll play the clip of Gingrich in a minute, but we're just about out of time here in this segment. This theory is totally nuts. The people who are you know, on for it are the racists, the haters, and the fearful. You know, the United States, the president of the United States is a Muslim terrorist sympathizer. By the way, don't tell those guys that Obama killed bin Laden. Their heads may explode. That's why Fox so-called news never mentions that little bit of history. We'll be back 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So what do you think? Is the Republican dog whistle going to work this time? I'm concerned that it will pick up some traction. The old dog whistle. There we go. By the way, in our third hour today, Judson Phillips, the attorney, associate director of TheTeaParty.net and founder of Tea Party Nation, is going to drop by. We're going to have a little conversation about the voter suppression laws, voter ID laws, and how those voter suppression laws, voter ID laws, are going to change the dynamic in the various states. That should be entertaining. And in our next hour, Bill Keller, president of Bill Keller Ministries, is going to drop by and explain to us how, of the people who were killed in Colorado, only the Christians are going to go to heaven. And if we were all Christians, it never would have happened. Or something like that. I don't quite have it right, but we will find out. I see it's there's some interesting stuff going on here. Tim in Plainfield, Illinois. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Tim.
Did you know John Sununu's of Arab heritage? Does that make him part of the... possibly part of the Arab Muslim Brotherhood?
I thought Sununu was a Christian Lebanese name. Am I wrong?
Well, it may be, but
I don't think I'm not sure that's Arab. But it's from the Middle East, right? It must be.
That's right.
I'm not really sure, Tim, but thank you for the call. I'm just not about going down. Well, maybe we should go down that road. Bill in Clifton, New Jersey, you want to remind us about the second largest stockholder in Fox News, Fox so-called news?
That's right. He should be investigated. And I wanted to tell you my dog whistle.
Well, tell us first who he is.
Oh, the Saudi prince who Giuliani refused to take, was it $10 or $15 million from after 9/11 because
yeah.
He had tied to... these camps where they train terrorists.
Yeah, isn't that like Prince Alawid or something like that? I forget his name.
Right.
But yeah, and he's the second largest stockholder in News Corp, which owns Fox so-called news. And
give money to the Republicans. But I was going to say about Bitburg, that was the biggest dog whistle for me when Reagan went there, and no one talks about that.
Yeah.
He was so... begged him not to go, but he went anyway.
You're talking about Philadelphia, Mississippi? Yeah.
What's that?
Philadelphia, Mississippi?
That is up there, too. And, you know, I just can't believe it. No one ever brings this stuff up at all. It's insane.
Okay.
And anyway, so I guess that's it.
Yeah, I think you made your point, Bill. Thanks a lot for the call. Tracy in Syracuse, New York, you're concerned that Reverend Wright is out to get us.
No, I didn't say that he was out to get us. I said that I'm not prejudiced. Half of my family is black. I love all of them. I personally think that our president of the United States went to a church for a very long time. With, if you go on YouTube and you listen to any of the sermons that were preached there, it's reverse discrimination, and he hates white people.
I've listened to probably 2 hours of Reverend Wright's various speeches, and I have never seen anything that remotely approximates hates white people. I would say that, and particularly, you know, his goddamn America statement, put that in context, and I think most Americans would agree with that speech. If America sins, God will condemn her, and that was his point. And he said it very, very eloquently, and you should put those things in context. But all that said, that was a very large, very politically active, the place to go African-American church that Barack Obama occasionally attended, and B,
for many, many years he attended.
Sure,
that church.
Sure. It was the place to go. And B, so what?
So those are his beliefs.
Well, no, first of all, you have not established.
I wouldn't go a place.
Nobody has established in my mind that Reverend Wright was a racist.
Many people have.
Give me one statement that he. Give me one statement that Reverend Wright said that in your mind establishes him as a racist.
Look at the United States, and you look at half of the officials that are elected within the United States of America. I don't believe that there's racism. Because half of the mayors of cities are black. Half of the Congress is black.
Half of the Congress is, I am sorry, Tracy, you are just completely out of touch. You are completely out of touch. I mean, you know, the Black Caucus would love it if you were right, but you are completely out of touch. Michael in Eureka, California. Hey, Michael. Thanks for listening to KGRE. What's up?
As a person that was in, you know, an elected position, I can say that it's important to keep things in perspective. And when we look at the hit pieces coming out by the GOP and how they're going to target certain populations, we have to, I think, in my mind, remember that the target population that they're after is mainly going to be the independent voters, because the GOP is not going to change its mind anyway.
Yep.
And most of the Democrats are probably going to vote Democrat. However, some of them won't, and there are 63 million registered Democrats as opposed to 47 million registered Republicans.
Right. They're going for the swing voters. This is Nixon's Southern strategy all over again. Although Nixon and Reagan actually went after Southern Democrats, now those Southern Democrats have been flipped Republicans, and they form the base of the Republican Party, the old base of the Republican Party, which was the affluent Northerners, the George Herbert Walker Bushes of the world. Increasingly, well, they're coming back to the Republican Party with Mitt Romney, but many of them have become Democrats over the years, you know, kind
well,
of the elite
according
of the Democratic
to
Party.
538, so far in polling that's been done, Barack Obama is, and I hate to say this because Murphy's Law always, you know, works in my world, is at this point has 296.1 delegates as opposed to 241.9 on the other side. So he's been leading by about 40 to 50 delegates.
You're talking electoral votes.
Yeah, electoral votes, excuse me.
The Romney's leading Obama.
But that can all change. And if Democrats vote Democrat, then Obama will be reelected. And I'm going to vote for him, that's for sure. I know he's not my favorite.
Well, the challenge is going to be to get right, Michael, thank you. The challenge is going to be to get the base out. I mean, that's going to be the challenge on the Democratic side. Mary in Pipe Creek, Texas. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm just so tired, and I'm not saying it's just them, but just to share a story, I'm a Hispanic female. I'm 60 plus years old, but the way I look and the way I sound, people don't know what I am. So I've been accused of being Mediterranean and Italian and everything else. I finally decided when I wasn't allowed to join a chola gang in my neighborhood when I was young that I was just going to be a human being and a female human being at that. And I'm getting so sick and tired of mainly the Republicans who are alienating everybody against each other.
It's all they have to sell.
They're alienating women against women, different nationalities, the North against the South. I mean, I feel it's 1861 again.
I agree. It's all they have to sell. Because if Mitt Romney came out and said, here's my policy. We're going to cut taxes on rich people. We're going to raise taxes on working people, which, by the way, is his policy. We're going to take all the Social Security money and give it to his rich buddies on Wall Street, which, by the way, is his policy. We're going to turn Medicare into a voucher program. We're going to do away with we're going to take student loans and give them to the banksters. We're going to turn all the jobs left in the United States. We're going to ship them offshore. Vote for me. Nobody would vote for him. So instead, what he has to say and what his surrogates have to say is, hey, have you noticed that Obama's middle name is Hussein?
Class against class also, you know, big time.
And yeah, no, there is, as Warren Buffett, Mary, thank you. Warren Buffett correctly pointed out there is class warfare in America and his class is winning. Mike in Jackson, Tennessee. Hey, Mike, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on you?
Three great forces rule the world, stupidity, fear, and greed. And then I want to comment on the guy that was so scared of the terrorist you were talking to.
Right.
Number of private U.S. citizens killed in terrorist attacks in 2010, 15. Number killed by fallen televisions, 16.
That's great.
All right, I'll talk to you.
Thank you, Mike. You just made my day. I appreciate the call. That's a great one. Donald in Aurora, Illinois. Hey, Donald, what's up? Thanks for listening to WCPT.
Yes, hi, Tim. You pretty much took the words out of my mouth, what I was going to say about Romney. The thing is I don't think people are really listening to what he really is telling them. This man here, if he ever gets in, he plans to ship these jobs overseas.
Oh, sure.
And the truth of the matter is, whatever little jobs are left, and when we start losing our houses and can't pay for insurance, put food on the table, he's going to tell us, well, we took big business out of your lives. You have the freedom to do whatever you want. You can go into business for yourself. You can all become entrepreneurs. Borrow money from your parents and start a business. This is where he plans to take us. This is his idea of employment. He always seems to bring out entrepreneurs all the time. And this is what's going to happen. And if the American people, these people that are going to vote for him, don't, if they follow that rule, they're going to be walking up the steps of the gallows and they're going to be dragging us right along with them.
Yeah, it is really remarkable that Romney has, he actually did say to that crowd one time, you know, you start a business, borrow money from your parents. Like, you know, everybody has multimillionaire parents like he did, or like his sons do. In fact, one of his kids has started a vulture capital fund now, with money from daddy, of course. It's just incredible. Donald, thank you for the call. People need to pay attention to what's going on, because there are real issues here. There are real issues here that are going to determine the fate and future of this country. This election is going to be one of the most pivotal that we've had, certainly in my lifetime, in many, many years.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And to take it a step beyond electoral politics, if we want to have an impact on not just this election, but on the fate and future of America, get involved in movement politics. Go to MoveToAmend.org. Yes, the old dog whistle politics. Welcome back. Joe in New York City listening to WWRL. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hi. Yes, actually, President Eisenhower in 1953 had the Muslim Brotherhood one year before his ban in invited to Princeton University.
Really?
And there was some sort of meeting because the CIA basically was, there was a book actually out about how the CIA actually was controlling the Muslim Brotherhood and using the militants in Egypt and the Middle East. And
right. Well, it's a very interesting history of the Muslim Brotherhood. Adam Curtis, the British documentarian who does, you know, makes movies for the BBC, has done a three-part movie called Oh, man.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm trying to remember the name. There's several of them. This one has something to do with terror. But in any case, he did a three 1 hour pieces all together that made one movie. And it was about, he starts out with Kitab. He starts out with the guy who was in St. Louis, Missouri, as I recall, and was going to college in the 1950s, and was so horrified by the idea that everybody had lawns that looked alike, you know, the whole suburban experience, and the young people were dancing in high school proms and things like that. He was so horrified by this that he went back to Egypt and started the Muslim Brotherhood at the same time that the neoconservative movement and Leo Strauss was starting that thing up at the University of Chicago. So, you know, and just, you know, how these things came together. I'm going to have to track down that Adam Curtis documentary for you. But for a while there, the Muslim Brotherhood went kind of radical, and then Kitab got arrested by, I think it was Nasser, and put in prison and eventually was executed. And an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood became what is now called Al-Qaeda. But most of it went basically mainstream, you know, sort of like the IRA has, and became a political party, which now, you know, has just elected their candidate to be the head of Egypt. So it's
right,
like
right now trying to create like a panic that, you know, like Wiener, the former Congressman Wiener of New York, wife, something to do with the Muslim Brotherhood. Now that the conservatives trying to bash her, she's a spy, and she's like has some secret taking over the whole country.
Yeah.
And
the Adam Curtis documentary, by the way, was The Power of Nightmares. I thought of it just as you said it, Shano. It's perfect. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Catherine in Wheatland, New York. Hey, Catherine, what's up?
Oh, I'm in Wheatland, Wyoming.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Wyoming.
Listening on 760 from Denver.
Uh-huh. So what's up?
I was wondering if any other presidential candidate ever went to a foreign country to raise money, because on the 26th of July, Mitt Romney is going to London, and he's going to have a reception with the very bankers that caused the LIBOR crisis, but not just bankers from England, from Germany, from Switzerland. They're all raising money for Romney.
Yeah.
Has any other presidential candidate ever done this?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if some had, but I think that this is particularly worthy of note. I think another thing that's worthy of note is that two of the 20 largest contributors to the Paul Ryan campaign, Paul Ryan, the guy who wants to voucherize Medicare, are Swiss banks, UBS and Credit Suisse. And these are foreign corporations, and they're contributing to a member of Congress, Paul Ryan, who's very powerful and influential, and who's sitting on $5 million cash right now, which he's doling out to help other members of Congress get elected, which enhances his political power. So, this is something that is important and well. And thank you, Catherine, for pointing it out. Well done, Thane in Ashland, Oregon. Hey, Thane, what's up?
Hi. I just want to make a quick point in response to a previous caller who was suggesting that. I think something along the lines of 50% of the House representatives are African American.
Right.
And I just looked it up really quick. As of 2010, it's 9.5%. And there's
right. Versus what, 16 or 18% of the population?
Not really a good section of the population.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Exactly. That was the point at which. That was the point at which she totally lost all credibility with me. Thank you, Thane.
Clearly not paying attention to.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. I appreciate it. Keith in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Keith, you want to argue with me?
Well, I don't know about argue with you, Tom, but you certainly have an extremely narrow view of people who don't approve of Barack Obama or seeing that
not
homosexuality
true.
Is that
I can give you a long list of areas where I disagree with Barack Obama. I do have, however, a very specific and clear dislike for people who use his race and his middle name to demonize him.
Well, and I agree with you completely, because number one, Barack Obama, he has a black father, but the man was raised by a white mother and white grandparents. Am I wrong about that?
No, you're right, but so what?
Okay, so then why is he so black in your guys' eyes?
Well, you asked a question, Keith. Let me give you the answer. If you had, you know, talk to somebody who grew up black in America, regardless of their parentage, probably a large majority of African Americans have some white people someplace in their family. It doesn't help any when they're being profiled by the cops on the streets. Barack Obama would have had a hard time hailing a cab in New York City 5 years ago.
Right, and I agree with you about that. I was raised around in a military life. I was raised around in a lot of different cultures my entire life. But Barack Obama, not only was he raised by a white family, but he also went to private schools, something that I never got a chance to go to.
And he went to public schools.
Why? Okay, but why
what private school did he go to?
Why is everybody that doesn't agree with him a racist?
Are you talking about a private college that he went to? Because I thought he went to public schools for high school, junior high school and high school.
Then I'm probably wrong about that. I understood that he went to private schools in high school.
He went to a private school when his mother was living in Indonesia when he was 7 years old for a year.
Okay.
And then he went to Harvard and Yale, I think, wasn't it?
But the point is, Tom, all in all, Barack Obama, I know a lot of people. I'm an independent, but I know a lot of people that don't agree with him. But it doesn't make them racist, and people that don't agree with him are so.
I am not suggesting it does. My whole point is that there are a plenty. There's no shortage of racists in America, and the Republicans and racists, Islamophobes, and homophobes. And the Republican Party has decided, as an intentional campaign strategy. In fact, there have been 2 leaks out of the Romney campaign that, in the 3 weeks running up to the election, in the end of October and November, they're going to be hitting hard his quote biography and his quote blackness and his quote otherness. That they're going to go after those racist voters, and I hope, Keith, you will agree with me that is not worthy of praise. It's worthy of condemnation.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, and just to set the record straight, somebody called in speculating about John Sununu's ancestry. His father grew up in Jerusalem. He's of Palestinian Greek descent. His father grew up in Jerusalem, Palestine. His mother was born in El Salvador. And as part of the mass exodus of Palestinians abroad to seek a better life, he's a Maronite Catholic. He was born in Cuba, but he's not Cuban. Interesting. So, and tip of the hat to Carprog in the and Jules and other folks in the chat room for digging that stuff out. Do appreciate it. So, we had this horrific event that happened over the weekend in Aurora, Colorado. And Bill Keller is on the line with us. He's president of Bill Keller Ministries. LivePrayer.com is the website, founder of LivePrayer.com. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Tom, always good to be on with you, my friend.
Thank you. I understand that you, well, let me not personalize this. I'm seeing headlines, evangelical leaders blame liberals and meeting for Aurora shootings. Say only Christian victims will go to heaven. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I'll tell you. Number one, let's not be mistaken. The ultimate blame for what happened in Aurora, Colorado lies in the hands of the guy who pulled the trigger, okay? So let's just say that right up front. He's the one responsible, nobody else. He exercised his free will and did that. I think where a lot of people, including myself, are coming from, however, we have over the last couple decades created an interesting culture of death in this country, where we've taken God and biblical values out of the mainstream. We've replaced it with all kinds of perversions of marriage and family. And in the process, through Hollywood, through the internet, through television, we have pushed a very godless agenda on this culture that has created an environment that does make it very ripe for people who are sick to act out those sick fantasies.
Then why was it that when George Washington was president, who refused to ever confess Christian belief, and in fact, in his deathbed, when they asked, do you want a minister, he explicitly said no. Why was it that Thomas Jefferson, who went out of his way to point out that he was a deist, he was not a Christian by any sense. In fact, the Jefferson Bible is still in print, where he took out all of Jesus's miracles. John Adams, who was sort of a Presbyterian, I suppose, but agreed with Jefferson that the biggest threat to America was the religious, arguably folks like yourself who want to see religion in politics, that those guys, those presidents,
right.
Did not preside over a time of great moral decay? Or would you say that the slavery was a great moral decay and it was because they weren't good Christians? Although it seems to me that the main rationale for slavery was it's in the Bible.
Well, number one, it's not in the Bible. It's a perversion of
scriptures
in the Bible. But let's come to now. Tom, you're old enough to know this. 30 years ago, it wasn't that we were shouting God and Jesus and biblical verses all over the place, but there was a culture that at least accepted, you know, biblical truth, biblical values. Over the last 20 years, there's been a concerted effort, especially in the media, to remove God from every kind of an issue.
You know, Bill, you and I are both old enough to remember that. I would submit that probably we were a little more secular 30 years ago. I mean, maybe more people went to church, but I don't think there were as many people who were strong evangelicals as there are now. It seems that whenever the country goes into a bad economic time, what you see is evangelism popping up. I mean, you can see that cycle, that kind of reverse cycle of bad economics equals high levels of evangelism since the founding of this country. Wouldn't it be more accurate to say that during the time of a strong middle class, a strong economy in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and early 80s, that there was arguably less religious activity?
No, actually, it's just the opposite. The evangelism you're seeing today really is pathetic compared to what it was 30, 40 years ago. The only reason it's even noticed is because there is such a dearth, and it's the church's fault.
Well, 30 years ago, other than Billy Graham, who was out there?
Listen, I remember when I was going to school in the 60s, 90% of the kids in my class, they went to church every Sunday. Now 90% of kids don't go to church. Here's what's happened, Tom. You have had religion, and it's the church's fault.
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with your statistics, although I think they're slightly exaggerated. But I would say it's the church's fault. Very interesting piece recently in the New York Times about how, you know, the Catholic Church has got people falling away. I personally think churches are like in clubs, and the churches that have the highest barriers to entry and the most rituals you've got to go through a very, very specific song and dance are the ones that seem to last the longest. The Mormons are very good at this, for example. The Catholic Church, I think that when they gave up the Latin Mass, it was a huge mistake. They lost their worthy in-club or a piece of it, you know. That's the sociology of religion. What I'm baffled by is people who would suggest that our gun violence culture or whatever, and actually murder is down now from where it was 10, 20 years ago, but that to the extent that it's still a problem, that it's a problem because of a lack or presence of religion. It seems to me like the two are unrelated.
Tom, let me tell you something. The church over the last 30, 40 years has removed itself from the culture. We've gone into this little subculture we've created with Christian television and Christian radio and Christian publications and Christian this. They've removed themselves from the culture. And what we have now is a culture of death. You know, it's a horrific thing that 12 people lost their lives in a movie theater last Thursday night in Aurora, Colorado. But how many of your listeners have thought for one second today that in the last 24 hours, we've slaughtered 4,000 innocent babies in this nation alone? I mean, we have created a culture of death where life is meaningless now, and that just facilitates an environment for a guy like this crazy guy in Colorado, Jared Loughner, or whoever
else.
First of all,
you know, more than half of the states in this country, people basically don't have access to abortion. There's no way there's 4,000 of them going on, unless you're talking about as a consequence of people taking birth control pills.
It is. It's a legitimate statistic. 4,000 a day in this country alone.
Surgical abortions.
Actual abortions.
Surgical abortions.
What? Yeah, Planned Parenthood clinics. Wherever you're.
Surgical abortions. No, I'm not buying that.
A day.
But it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
My point. If you want to turn this into a debate about abortion, we can do
I'm
that.
I'm not turning into a debate. But what I'm saying.
But what happened in Colorado was those were fully grown up people who got killed. And the guy who killed him, and what I don't get is why anybody would say that the people who were killed are not going to go to heaven if they weren't members of a particular church.
Well, that's a theological belief, and if you believe the Bible, if you're a Christian, you believe the only way to go to heaven is through faith in Jesus Christ. If something else, this incident has at least I hope.
Well, and, you know, at least the Mormons have this little ritual where you can kind of stand in for somebody and who died and get them to heaven. I mean, isn't that kind of inclusiveness kind of cool?
No, actually, it's the most inclusive thing at all, because Jesus said, any who believe, you don't have to be born a certain way, it's a matter of faith, but if you believe the Bible, and in this incident probably shows more than anything how quick life can be over. It's a fleeting thing, it's over quick.
Jerry Newcomb.
That's why faith is so important.
Good point. Jerry Newcomb, evangelical spokesperson for the Christian radio, AFA Today show, said that the shooting had happened because we have lost our fear of God and hell. I really don't. I just want to say I don't believe it. I
think there's an element of truth to that, but I think more than anything, we have desensitized an entire generation that's now grown up desensitized
to what?
To the preciousness and the value of life, whether it's through the violence in the movies, video games.
How about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Life has no importance.
Hello?
I'm here.
How about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan? How about capital punishment?
Defending your country is a whole different thing than some guy going to
the movie. Those are different things. Okay. Bill Keller, the website is liveprayer.com. Thanks, Bill.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So I guess killing is different than killing if it's in war or, well, we'll discuss it.
Just keep on living.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think what the problem with religion today is that there's a lot of very, very bad religion, and people are just rejecting it. They just don't, it doesn't resonate with the truth.
I don't disagree. I would submit to you that there are two reasons why people participate in organized religion. The first is that it provides them with a venue or a method or an opportunity to touch the sacred, that they sit together, they pray together, they sing together, they meditate together, they do something that makes them feel good. Okay, so there's a feeling piece associated with it. And then the second, a spiritual feeling piece associated with it, which doesn't, you know, for some people they say, I don't know what you're talking about. And other people say, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. So this is kind of an individual experience thing. And then the second reason people participate in religion is because it's their tribe. There's a sense of community. It's their sense of family. This is something that's wired into the DNA of every animal, particularly mammals, and wired into humans. And our tribes have been busted up over and over and over again, virtually all of us, a million times. And so we reform tribe. We're constantly looking for a way to form tribe. And that's why I was saying earlier that it seems to me that the churches, just looking at it, anthropologically, that the churches that are the most exclusive, that are the most, this is an in-club that you have to really work at to join, are the churches that are the most successful, because they have that sense of strong community. And once you're part of that community, you know people have your back.
Right.
And neither of those have anything to do with society as a whole, culture at large, whether anybody's going to kill anybody in Aurora, Colorado, or anything else.
Right.
Is my take.
I think that I would like to also say that evangelicals in particular seem to deny free will, and this is a big problem for, true Christian doctrine. It's antithetical to Christianity. They want to force people to believe and believe on their terms, and that's what they really are after, is power, not true faith.
The debate of the free will debate. I mean, go back and read St. Augustine's writings on this. This is something that goes back. For that matter, go back and read, Aristotle and Plato on free will. This has been going on for a long, long time.
I'm an Orthodox Christian, and I don't think you can get probably more, ritualistic than that in Christianity. And yet,
which is that? Russian, Greek?
They have the right. They are given that right by God to choose what they want to choose, and it's just as simple as that. Abortion, on the other hand, involves another party, and I'm not in favor of it. However, I don't just look at two issues when I'm judging what is going on outside of the church.
Right, or in a political venue. Thank you for a thoughtful call, John. I appreciate it. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, thanks for listening to Talk 1090. We had a great time on Saturday night. I hope you were there.
I absolutely did. We chatted for a minute or so.
Oh, great.
And yeah.
Great.
Oh. And you signed my baseball.
Great. I remember it well.
Okay, so and I did what you said. I got up on Monday morning, and the first thing I did was call local candidates running for office this fall.
Uh-huh.
And I said, let's see your disclosure on how much money you're taking from the NRA.
Oh, interesting. And what kind of responses did you get?
Well, I called the two candidates for governor who were running, and Jay Inslee said, we absolutely don't take a dime. And then Rob McKenna said they'd get back to me, and they emailed back and said that, well, in 2008, when he ran for attorney general, he did take money from the NRA, but this year he has not taken any money from the NRA.
Well, now he doesn't have to. They can just run ads on his behalf, his independent expenditures, and they can claim, oh, I never took a penny from those Koch brothers. I never took a penny from that NRA. I never took a penny, I'm waiting for Mitt Romney to say, I never took a penny from Ahmadinejad, you know? I mean, the Iranians, the Republicans have been the Iranians' best friend for so long that George W. Bush killed their major enemy in the Middle East, who was, Saddam Hussein. He killed 1 million Iranians. George, his father, George Herbert Walker Bush, was part of the Reagan administration, which sold weapons to the Iranians, against U.S. law. So I am convinced that the Iranians right now are secretly funding Mitt Romney and the Republicans because they've been so good to them. But anyhow, you called actually to talk about slavery in the Bible.
Yep. First of all, I want to say that your guest Bill Keller, just the sound of him on the air made me think what a pompous ass he's.
No. Come on, don't pick on somebody who's not here to defend himself. Just
well, wait a minute.
Not.
I'm just saying this. He sounds whatever he was talking on sounded like he was trying to sound like the voice of God. Talk on the phone.
We're all doing our best, Paul. Come on, we're all doing our best.
All right, let me get down to facts. He said there is no slavery in the Bible. I would direct him, since he's a minister, to Ephesians chapter 6, verse 5, that says, "Slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear and sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ." I think that says slavery.
Yeah, and that was Paul's letter to the Ephesians. You're absolutely right. And it's not obviously the only place. And in fact, you go back to the book of Joshua, God commanded Joshua to go into some communities and kill everybody, into other communities, kill some people and take the others as slaves.
When he sacked Jericho, he killed every man, woman, child, and beast.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's Joshua chapter 6.
Yeah.
I also want to say.
And the city of Ai.
As what he had to say, though, everything he said begs the question. He says that, first of all, 4,000 babies are murdered. That begs the question as to whether that's murder, you see? And he doesn't consider war to be murder. And then the other thing is he intimates that and abortions are what caused Jared Loftner and this James Holmes to go on a murder spree. He's drawing and also that a third point is that we're getting God out of that's begging the question too. Is he supposing that all these people that were killed, these 12 people that were killed last Thursday or Friday morning, and those that were injured are godless people and did not worship? That's God's problem. Why didn't God save?
See, I don't. Paul, thank you for the call. I just want to make a point here. I don't think God had anything to do with this, one way or the other. If you're positing that kind of an anthropomorphic God, then that's a little spooky. But B, I do think that organized religion plays an important and healthy role for many people, and we need to keep these things in perspective.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And for many of those people, that religion is not participating with the church at all, but it's like walking outside and touching a tree. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Jean in Appleton, Wisconsin. Hey, Jean, what's up?
Hi. My name is Jean, and I'll honestly tell you, my husband has your program streaming over the computer 24/7.
Oh, my.
And I just happened to sit down at his computer, and I heard the reverend person talking about lack of religion or sphere of heaven and hell causing these murders. And it sparked me to call, which I didn't think I ever would, but what about the Crusades? I'm sitting here thinking, what about the Crusades, who was killing all these people who didn't believe the way the people on the horses believed, so we had to kill them?
Yeah, well, or you could take it a step beyond that. Germany was officially a Christian nation in the 1930s
and
early 40s.
And they had to kill 6 million people.
Yeah, they had.
The way they believed.
Yeah, Pastor Mueller was the official bishop appointed by the Reichsbishop appointed by Hitler himself.
Well, I don't think religion necessarily prevents murder. And then we have, even now, you have in some countries where you have honor killings. A young woman will date someone she's not supposed to date. She's dead tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think that, you know, otherwise it would only be atheists whoever committed these murders. And yeah. I'm an atheist, and I'm pushing 70. I've never killed anybody.
There you go. I think most atheists, particularly people who are honest about, you know, their atheism, are you know, good, decent people. I mean, it's thoughtful people.
And then his you know, I think his confusing that with abortion and, you know, calling that murder, you know, it depends on how you look at that. You know, I look at that in terms of potentiality. I cracked an egg for breakfast this morning. I did not murder a chicken.
Yeah, well, that's,
you know,
and that's...
And it depends on whether you consider a zygote a person.
Yeah, and this is...
He does, I don't.
Gene, that is a much larger debate for another day. But you're absolutely right. It is a much larger issue. Thank you for the call. Cora in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Cora, what's up?
Well, is this about our president, quote, being foreign? I think we ought to bring up the Swiss conspiracy because Michelle Bachmann had to give up her Swiss citizenship. Paul Ryan gets that money from the Swiss bank.
Right.
And then, of course,
and the Swiss, that government has not changed since Hitler, and they were neutral during World War II, and they
Wasn't there a thing about them returning money for Holocaust victims, though, that it banked there?
Yeah.
Wasn't there a problem with that?
Well, they resisted it for decades.
So, I mean, it's not like they're clean and
right.
neutral.
My point.
It's the greedy fascist thing. And, of course, Mitt Romney has a Swiss bank account, and he's raising money over there in England, you know, with this big banquet he's having. But that brings up this fascist question, too, because with that thing you were speaking about last week with the El Salvador connection to Bain Capital Investments.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people think, well, that was back in the 80s, and it's like, well, that didn't affect us, so what? But, you know, let me bring up that very, you know, courageous judge in Spain who tried to bring war criminals to trial.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as he mentioned Federico Franco's name and the regime, he was taken down.
Yeah.
And what, Franco died in the 70s, didn't he?
As I recall, yeah.
So, you know, fascism lasts a long time.
Oh, yeah. And it's ongoing in many parts of the world, and it's making a rise in the United States. It's just as what was it, Sinclair Lewis or Upton Sinclair? I mix up my Sinclairs all the time. You know, said when fascism comes to the United States, it'll be wearing a cross and carrying a Bible or carrying a flag or words to that effect, maybe an apple pie. But here we are. Cora, thank you for the call. Well said. John in Philadelphia. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, I was just wondering, whenever the guy was talking about how that we've become more violent because we've become less Christian. If Ben was the only person who remembered all those Bible verses being written on the sides of bombs and the evangelicalism of the Air Force, that you know, those people were very zealous to fight against the Muslims based on their religion. So I don't think that a lack of religion has done anything to increase any sort of violence.
Yeah, excellent point. Thank you for making it. Kenneth in Chino, California. Hey, Kenneth, what's up?
Hey, my question is about the Second Amendment and gun control. Does the Second Amendment say anything about magazine sizes or the amount of weapons you can buy at one time?
At the time the Second Amendment was written, there was no such thing as a magazine. We had flintlocks or flint loaders or whatever they're called. You know, guns were a little piece of steel, had to hit a little piece of flint and create a little spark that ignited a little wick that set off the gunpowder that threw a little musket ball out. It was a very different time.
Canada doesn't seem to have the same gun problems that we have, and they put in tighter gun control. I mean, isn't it
somewhat
our First Amendment right not to get shot?
That's a good question, and this is one that I keep raising, is what about the rights of us who don't own guns? But, you know, that said, I think that you have to look at the socioeconomic factors. And people, some people say, you know, socioeconomic factors and gun violence. You know, why is it that the United States has like 8,000 or 9,000, you know, gun deaths a year, and Canada has maybe a couple hundred? And if you calibrate it for, you know, the size of the country, we're still way up there, right? And by socioeconomic, what I'm pointing out is that we've got more billionaires and more poor people and a smaller middle class. The middle class, when people have a decent job and when their kids are in a stable community and they're going to school and, you know, basically life is okay, they tend not to go off shooting people. And they tend not to, you know, domestic violence goes down, child abuse goes down, mental illness goes down, all those things in more equal societies, those social ills all fall. And in unequal societies, which America has become one of the world's most unequal societies since Ronald Reagan dropped the top tax rate, in unequal societies, you see all those societal indicators of social crisis rising. And I see that, you know, if you're looking for a cause, that's about, I think, as close as we're going to get to anything. Kenneth, thank you for the call. Well said. Dolores in Portland. Hey, Dolores, what's up? Dolores? No, Dolores. Okay. Michael in Dublin, Virginia. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Yes, we have one of the things I'd like to mention is the corporate violence that evades the everyday citizen's awareness and invades our culture. That psychology was used in the 50s and 60s to do research in behavioral science, social science for the military. And the American Psychology Association was a part of that, especially during the 50s and 60s. What I'm proposing is that they dominate the airways, the corporate interests dominate the airways, they buy airspace to put forth signals that protrude our space and our mental capacity. Tesla, the scientist who invented the wall circuit, the outlet that we use, he proposed that we could use low-frequency electronic waves to condition and program people's behavior. And I believe that this gentleman may have been a possible participant in an experiment that's being conducted in our airways.
Yeah, well, you never know, Michael. I mean, you know, it may sound a little crazy. A friend of mine actually went to MIT and got swept up in the CIA LSD experiments. He was given LSD by the CIA in the 60s. And, I still know the guy. He's still a friend of mine. So, you know, it's real. It's amazing, but it's real. Russ in Windsor Locks, Connecticut. Hey, Russ, what's up? Thanks for listening to WHMP.
Yes, Tom, real quick, just something about religion. I hear people call in that hardly ever gets discussed. I'm a volunteer with a local food bank.
Mm-hmm.
And 80 to 90% of the institutions that we distribute food to that serve the poor and the hungry, 80 to 90% of them are religious, are churches.
Right.
So we have a few synagogues, but this is something people who, you know, call up and complain about churches. 80 to 90% of the food banks that are out there serving the poor, serving the hungry, they are churches.
Yeah, and I would submit to you that comes out of that sense of cult of community, because the other small percentage you're going to find are typically also groups that are my club, right? It's the Moose and the Elks and the Rotary, and, you know, groups that may be more secular, but they're still this is you know, a bunch of us getting together doing something decent, and everybody gets it that something decent is to feed hungry people, and you don't need the Bible to tell you that.
And I would say also that the other groups that are secular, the groups that actually go there to actually service them, a good part of them probably come from churches and synagogues.
Yeah, they may have grown up in that. But the question, if the issue you're raising is, did morality come out of biblical teaching, or did biblical teaching come out of morality that was inherent in humans long before any religious figures came along? I would argue strongly it's the latter rather than the former, and that the only proof that you need for that is to look at the thousands of Aboriginal indigenous cultures around the world that have very, very highly tuned, well, you know, finely tuned moral systems, and, you know, never heard of a divine being who inspired the writing of a book.
I'm just saying that this is something that people don't know, that very few people know. And being on the inside of this food organization, I see it. And it's something I think that more people, that it'd be good if more people knew.
Yeah. Well, you said it well, Russ. Thanks. Blake in Chicago, just a little less than a minute. Blake, thanks for listening to WCPT. You want to talk about Adam Curtis and the Power of Nightmares?
Ah, yes. So you did remember the name
of the, I did.
Okay. Oh, well, he's got a new one out that is just as good as that, and I would also highly recommend it. A couple callers back touches upon something that a couple callers back said. The Century of Self is a four-part series that talks about Edward Bernays and the power of public relations.
I watched it on the internet about 5 months ago. Yeah, it is great. Adam Curtis has like four major documentaries out, if I recall right, and I've seen them all. He is absolutely brilliant. And it's just tragic that his stuff doesn't play in the United States. It's BBC only. But you can track it down. Blake, thanks a lot for the call. Adam Curtis, if you're looking it up. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Adam Curtis, The Power of Nightmares. We'll be back. Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Welcome back to Talk Media for the Sane Among Us. It's the Tom Hartman Program and Freddie in Lords Valley, Pennsylvania. Hey, Freddie, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tommy, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Thanks for some great shows, by the way.
Thank you.
This might sound a little off topic, but reality is not. I was wondering whether you can give me any hint about why Bubba repealed Glass-Steagall, because the magnification between the rich and the poor and the insecurity of the working man leads to a lot of crazy things.
Yeah. I think that when Bill Clinton signed the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, which is what blew up Glass-Steagall and ended it in either 99 or 2000, and similarly the Commodity Futures Modernization Act, which both of which were authored by Phil Graham, whose wife Wendy was a lobbyist for Enron, or on the board, excuse me, of directors of Enron, and Phil and Wendy were in tight with Ken Lay. I think that when Bill Clinton signed those, the prevailing theory at that time among him and Robert Rubin and that whole crowd, Lawrence Summers, was, you know, we haven't had a really serious bank panic in this country since 1935. You know, things are stable, things are solid, our bankers are sophisticated, they got this stuff figured out. There was that SNL thing in 86, but Reagan put almost 1,000 people in jail, so I don't think that any serious bankers are going to seriously break the law. Let's do a little deregulation here and see if it gooses the economy. I think that that's basically what they were thinking. It was stupid, but I don't think that it was malicious.
No, I don't, because like Bill Clinton is half a hero of mine, and I don't really think he meant to do harm, but you give these guys a chance, and don't do harm, believe me.
Yeah. Well, this is one. It kind of falls in the category of hubris, I think, thinking that, you know, we've got it all figured out, everything's fine, don't worry, you know, we can take care of this. Freddie, thanks a lot for the call. Hunter in Atlanta. Hey, Hunter, it says you want to disagree with me. What's up?
Hey, man. I don't get off to see where, you know, y'all think you can take the Second Amendment away or limit any type of firearm that American citizen can own.
Well, first of all, when did you hear me say that the Second Amendment should be removed from the Constitution?
No, but you didn't say it should be removed from the Constitution.
Okay.
You didn't say that.
All right. So then let's go to your point that I'm suggesting that any kind of firearm should not be for sale at Walmart, for example. Do you think that you, me, or the guy next door ought to be able to walk into Walmart and buy a shoulder-fired surface-to-air missile?
No.
Okay, so you're in favor of some sort of arms control?
Yes, I'm in favor of mass weapons of mass destruction, which
right.
any kind of missile
okay.
is.
Then we agree on that.
Hold on a second.
That
we agree on that.
So the question is, where do we draw the line? And I'll tell you where I draw the line, and I'd like to hear where you draw the line. I draw the line in my mind, speaking as somebody, I've never gone hunting. I've been a vegetarian since I was 16. The idea of killing something grosses me out. But, you know, I respect people who go hunting and eat what they killed. I got no problem with hunters. So if somebody wants to have a weapon, an appropriate weapon for hunting, I understand that. I support their right to have that. I have throughout my life done a lot of firing range shooting. I'm a graduate of the Georgia Police Academy. I know how to handle a firearm. One of my brothers is like really, you know, big into handguns. I'm quite familiar. with the technology and the sport of competitive shooting and all that. And I've got no problem with people having handguns for self-protection or for sport.
Okay.
But where we cross the line, in my mind, is when we talk about a weapon whose principal purpose is military. The AR-15. The AR-15 is a slightly modified, quote, civilian use version of the AK-47. The AR-15 right. is what this guy was using in Colorado with a 100-round clip in it, right? He had a 100-round,
right.
one of those round clips on it. Tell me why
okay.
anybody, and now, and I, let me say, on shooting ranges, in fact, you know, my kids went with me one time, and they all had the opportunity to shoot and tried, you know, and did shoot an Uzi in full automatic. Hey, isn't this fun? Or isn't this interesting? Or, hey, let's discover how, you know, let's understand what this stuff is about, and it's not just like you see in the movies. But I can see that
okay.
on a shooting range where you're renting it. But who needs
yeah.
to own
well, okay.
an AR-15
okay,
with a 100-round clip?
I can answer that. Okay, I myself own an AK-47, and I have several high-cap magazines. And the perfect answer to that
Why?
Is... No, hold on. Just listen. The Second Amendment is what all the liberals don't understand. And I want everybody out there to understand, the Second Amendment is not for hunting. The Second Amendment is not for recreational shooting. The Second Amendment is self-preservation, preservation of the society and the society's laws, not by a military, not by police, but by the citizens themselves. That is what the Second Amendment is for, and that is why I own an assault rifle, and nobody's ever going to take it away. I don't care what treaty you sign or what law you pass.
You know, I don't entirely disagree with you. If you go back and you read the Madison's notes on the Constitution, and you go back and you read the Federalist Papers where these issues are discussed, but most importantly, you know, Madison's notes on the Constitution and his correspondence with Jefferson, which is what led to the Second Amendment. Jefferson demanded the Bill of Rights be added, or he was going to pull a Virginia delegation, and the Constitution never would have been ratified. Because originally, I mean, it was ratified without the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights came a few years later. And the original Second Amendment said there will be no army during times of peace. The army will be dissolved. And the reason why is, and this is the same reason why in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, the only thing that Congress can appropriate money for that is limited to 2 years is the military. Anything else, Congress can appropriate money for 50 years. But if you're going to appropriate money for defense, it cannot exceed a 2-year appropriation. And the reason why is because the founders were very suspicious of the military. So what they wanted was a militia at the local level that was well regulated, that was answerable to local officials who would then be answerable to state officials who would then, you know, make themselves available to federal officials if they agreed with it. And if we had a well regulated local militia, you know, if the National Guard really worked the way it should, then I would not disagree with you at all. But we don't. Instead, what we've got is you know, people who think that they're going to be part of the militia and think that someday they're going to have to fight off the U.S. government, which ain't never going to happen. I'm sorry. There's no way with your AK-47 you can take on a helicopter gunship. So
I would agree.
Okay.
I would agree.
All right. Hunter, thank you for the call. Thank you for the thoughtful call. I appreciate it. We'll be back. It's 57 minutes past the hour. And, Judson Phillips is going to drop by theteaparty.net about the voter suppression laws. They're not really voter suppression laws, are they?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Mike Terzai, the Republican from Pennsylvania, has this to say about voter suppression ID laws. Clip
number. Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
All right. And here's Glenn Grotham, the state senator from Wisconsin, saying that the voter suppression ID laws will help Romney in that state.
Do you think it might
yes.
ultimately help Romney's campaign here in the state?
I think we believe that insofar as there are is inappropriate things going on, people vote inappropriately, I'm more likely to vote Democrat.
So if these protections are in place of voter ID, that might not ultimately help him in a close race. Right.
Right. Right. It's all about helping Romney. Judson Phillips is on the line with us, theteaparty.net, attorney and associate director of theteaparty.net, founder of Tea Party Nation. Judson, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
I don't get the cost versus benefit equation here, and maybe you can enlighten me. Typically, when we look at the cost of something, we ask ourselves, or when we look at the benefit of something, we ask ourselves, what is the cost of that? Whether it's the amount of mercury coming out of a power plant, or whether it's a speed limit, or, you know, whether it's the drinking age, whatever it may be. And we have, with the best efforts, over $70 million spent over an eight-year period of 93 federal prosecutors running full-time operations out of their offices across the United States during the Bush administration. With the very best efforts of the federal government, we have maybe 30, 40 people a year in the United States who are voting fraudulently. And typically, they are people who either are voting on behalf of their spouse, either because they don't like their spouse's politics or because their spouse has dementia, or they are felons who didn't realize that in the state they are on, you know, they've been released from, they can't vote. And if they get caught, they go back to prison. So it's kind of a dumb thing. Given that that's the risk that we're facing, why come up with a cost, you know, to keep those 15 people a year from voting? Why come up with a cost that's going to throw 5 million mostly Democratic voters off the roll?
Well, it's not going to throw people off the roll. Look, what the benefit of these laws is having fair and accurate elections. And, you know, whether
we have that now.
We do?
Yes. I'm telling you, George W. Bush spent $74 million looking for examples of election fraud, and what he came up with was Ann Coulter. She was registered at her agent's office.
Yeah,
I mean, Mitt Romney, he was registered. He was living in a mansion in California, the one that he's put an elevator in for his wife's second Cadillac. But he registered to vote in Massachusetts in his son's unfinished basement. He no longer owned real estate in Massachusetts. He bragged about this in the primaries, just so he could vote against Teddy Kennedy. Voter fraud.
Voter fraud is when you have in Colorado, as they documented, 12,000 non-citizens registered to vote, and at least 5,000 of them in the election voted.
Not true. Couldn't be.
Yes, it is.
How many of those
yes,
people were prosecuted, Judson?
Zero, as far as I know.
Right. So you don't have any basis to assert that there are crimes. Certainly, there are people on the voting rolls who shouldn't be there. There are people on the voting rolls who are dead because we don't clean them up all that often. There's people who've moved, all kinds of things like that. But to actually have somebody show up and say, "I'm going to commit voter fraud. I am not eligible to vote, but I'm going to go in and vote anyway." That just doesn't happen in America with any kind of frequency. And you know as well as I do, I mean, these statistics are not a secret. The Republican Party brags about them. You know, the percent, about a fifth of African Americans in the United States of voting age don't have the kind of ID that many of these state laws would require. Slightly less than a fifth of Hispanics in America don't have them. Slightly more than a fifth, almost a third of people over 75 years old don't have the kind of ID. These are and the same kind of percentage for people under 24 years old. These are constituencies that typically vote for Democrats. If you're looking at white middle class middle aged guys, you know, the voter ID, not having a voter ID, drops down to around 3%. So, you know, best way to rig an election, it's deciding who can vote.
Yeah, and, you know, you missed one key Democratic constituency, dead people. I mean, you know, and unfortunately, dead people have this really hard time getting good IDs. I mean, just
please name one dead person who has voted.
How's Eric Holder? James O'Keefe from Project Veritas showed up on D.C.'s primary day, got Holder's ballot. Now, he didn't put it back because he didn't want to violate the law. They were
right. That's the whole point. He didn't want to break the law. He would have gone to prison. What James O'Keefe tried to do was voter fraud, And he didn't. And nobody else did either, because they don't want to go to jail either. That's not a reason to throw 5 million people off the rolls.
The part we want is a fair and accurate election.
You have
and when
that.
No, we don't. Look, in the state of Nevada, Acorn has been convicted, and one of its senior vice presidents were convicted of filing at least 60,000 fraudulent voter registrations.
Acorn was the one who was turning in the people who were fraudulently registering. Get your facts right, Judson.
Hey, Tom, my friend, Acorn was convicted in the Circuit Court of Las Vegas. I've got the county of Las Vegas, but they were convicted there, as was their senior vice president. Now, why would they be
chance.
Turning in?
Not a chance. Acorn has never been, and besides that, Acorn doesn't even exist anymore. This is all, you know, and again, Acorn, oh my God, it's mostly black people registering, mostly black people, right?
Hey, Tom, Acorn was convicted, like I said, I'll bet you a steak dinner on it. I'll bring the proof with me. If you're going to be on the show tomorrow night, I'll bring it with
you. If you're that certain, you know, I don't bet, Judson, but if you're that certain of it, I will stipulate that you're right. Then let's put those people in jail.
They actually got probation. They weren't put in. You can't put a corporation in jail, but the lady whose name escapes me right now, she got a couple.
Okay,
years
so you
of
got
probation,
you got one person who was convicted. You got one person who was convicted of it. But how many people have shown up to vote who were not legal to vote?
Colorado. That's one example I gave you. In Cookeville, Tennessee, they
no
had
convictions.
No. Do you have any idea how hard it is to convict somebody of illegal voting?
It's about the same as convicting somebody of robbing a bank. I mean, it's
No, it's not. You basically have to have the person confess, I voted illegally, in order to get a conviction. The law.
What are you talking about? You've got their signature on the voter rolls when they sign up. You've got to sign something to vote. Let's even stipulate, Judson. Let's stipulate that 10 or 20,000 people a year are illegally voting. You know, use your numbers. Is that worth throwing 5 million people off the voting rolls? Is that a reasonable cost-benefit equation?
It is worth making sure that people who are allowed to vote can vote, and people who are not allowed to vote don't vote. If you think about it, there have been a number of elections that have been extraordinarily close, including the infamous Bush v. Gore in Florida, which was decided by 537 votes. If you have 1,000 people who are voting illegally, that could throw an entire presidential election.
Well, and this is a perfect example, and thank you for bringing it up, Judson. In that election, Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush conspired to throw 60,000 African-Americans off the voting rolls illegally, and those people showed up, thought they voted, they were given provisional ballots. Their votes were never counted because they'd been taken off the voting rolls because somebody in Texas had a similar name and happened to be a felon. I mean, Bush would have overwhelmingly lost Florida if they hadn't rigged who could vote. And that's what's going on here, in my opinion. But Judson, my apologies for not letting you have the last word. We are at theteaparty.net is the website. Judson, thanks for dropping by.
Hey, Tom, thank you.
Okay, good luck. We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I still don't, you know, even if it was tens of thousands of people who are showing up illegally to vote because they're so nefarious, is it worth throwing 5 million people off the voting rolls?
Why can't they count our votes? And if they can count thousands of bombs and still be buying more, why can't they count our votes?
Well, and who's the they? I mean, increasingly our votes are counted by private for-profit corporations that contribute to Republicans. Jim in, is it Raton, New Mexico, Jim?
It's pronounced Raton.
Raton, okay. So what's up?
Well, you mentioned it with the last lady, and you just mentioned it yourself. The next time you talk voter ID laws with the Republican people, ask them why they're not going after the voting machines.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I should have brought it up with Judson. Thank you for the reminder. Next time I will. Thomas in Jefferson, Texas. Hey, Thomas, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I got the specifics on that conviction for voting fraud.
Okay.
It was in Nevada, Acorn group there, they had paid employees that were paid a $5 bonus if they got more than 21 registrations in their shift.
Okay.
That was it. They'd get an extra $5 if they got more than 21. Now, some people were probably, you know, forging some to get that $5.
Right.
And it was a $5,000 fine that the corporation got, but the corporation was defunct and they really couldn't get anything out of it. But that right. was the whole deal. It wasn't voting fraud. It was some people trying to register, you know, trying to get more people to register by giving an incentive to the employees.
Right.
And it was the giving the incentive to the employees was illegal under Nevada law.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. I appreciate it. Kelly in Fort Myers, Florida. Hey, Kelly, what's up?
Hi. I would. I live in Florida, obviously, and our governor is illegally pulling thousands of voters off the rolls because, as he says, and I quote, because people lie. And I want to point out that if people lie, then our entire justice system is actually should be called into question, because if people lie, then they could, I guess, lie on the stand. And I think that's a lot more important than people lying here and there over wanting to vote, I guess.
Well, and
so
maybe.
I just wanted to bring up that point.
Yeah, I mean, there's this, you know, Sigmund Freud came up with this thing called projection, where, you know, you project your own psychopathologies on other people. You wonder to what extent Rick Scott was speaking of himself, perhaps unconsciously.
People lie.
Yeah, there you go.
Absolutely.
There you go.
We have a felon, or we have a, I'm sorry, he pled the fifth, I think, in office.
Yeah, okay.
Well, thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Kelly. Thanks for the call. Bob in Skokie, Illinois. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, Tom,
Bob?
How are you?
Great, great.
Hey, thank you.
What's up?
Hey, listen, I was just listening to your interview, and the gentleman talked about Acorn in Nevada.
Right.
And, you know, I think Google and the Internet must have been invented by the Democrats, because every time I hear a Republican say something that just doesn't make sense, I look it up on Google, and of course it's wrong. So
right.
He's right. They were convicted in Nevada. You know what they were convicted of?
What?
They pleaded guilty to, quote, unlawful compensation. And what that means is campaign workers received cash if they registered 21 voters or more.
Right. They got a $5 bonus.
Yeah, so they were found $5,000.
And that's illegal. Yeah, an earlier caller pointed that out. You're apparently absolutely right, and, you know, but, hey, you know, facts and conservatives, always...
I don't know why they love to bend the truth. I mean, there's something in there.
Because, you know, if you don't bend it, it doesn't work. You know?
Yeah, it's true.
What can you say?
Have a nice day.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Dan in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I was just curious. Do you think that voting or having the right to own a gun is more important? Having the right to vote or having the right to have a gun?
All right. First of all, the Constitution does not guarantee us a right to vote. The Supreme Court in Bush v. Gore came right out and said there is no enumerated right to vote in the Constitution. So, therefore, they had the right to ignore the will of the voters of the state of Florida. So from, you know, my own personal perspective is that the right to vote should supersede all other rights, because that's the technique, the method by which we make sure that people who represent our interests are in Congress and doing what we want. But that's not the state of law in the United States right now. What was the gotcha, or where you were trying to get to with your question?
Well, where I was trying to go with it is simply that if it's that much, if it's more important, I mean, you want to know who owns guns, you want to know who drives cars. Why is it that you can?
I don't. No, actually, I don't want to know who owns guns. I just want to know that somebody made sure that they are competent and both competent with the vehicle or the weapon, and not mentally incompetent in a way that, you know, they may be competent to drive or to shoot. But they should also be
competent and responsible enough to cast a vote in a country that they should want to represent and know that that election was represented properly. And
so you're arguing for a return to literacy tests?
No, not at all. I'm arguing for the fact that your question that you ask many times of people when they're on the phone is, give me an example of somebody you know committed voter fraud. And it's a trick question, because you can't answer the question when you don't know who's voting.
But we do know who's voting.
No, No.
You have to, when you vote, you have to sign in. You log yourself in.
Well, then if I just went into a gun shop and logged myself in, are they going to hand me a rifle?
If you were pre-registered.
But I had to prove who I was at some point, correct?
Well, yeah, and you do that when you vote, too. The first time you register to vote, you have to demonstrate who you are. But why should it be that every time you vote, having your voter ID card your voter registration card isn't enough, or signing in and having them compare, having that volunteer there compare your signature to your signature from when you first registered to vote? How come that's not good enough? I'll tell you, the reason why it's not good enough for these Republicans is because, you know, between 20% and 30% of people in the demographics that vote heavily Democratic, that would be poor people, African Americans and elderly people and students, don't have the kind of ID that these laws specifically require.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
If these guys are really serious about the integrity of the vote and making sure that, you know, all the vote is clean, they'd be asking for paper ballots. The very, very suprostumously ugly, the good, Yang Qing. Unlike CEOs in America who hoard their wealth and collect millions in bonuses at the expense of their employees, Yang Qing, the CEO of the computer company Lenovo, actually cares about his workers. He's giving his entire $3 million bonus to 10,000 of Lenovo's employees, the majority of whom work in China. Each employee will get $317, or about the same as 1 month's pay. According to news reports, Yang said he made the decision because he owes, quote, the strength of the company's business performance to the workers on the production line, end quote. If only CEOs in the U.S. felt the same. The bad, Senator John Kyle. Republican Kyle took the Senate floor yesterday to attack President Obama, complaining that he talks about the middle class too much. Kyle said, most prominently, we have a president who talks incessantly about class, particularly the middle class. Maybe you've noticed that. Well, Senator Kyle, you know what I've noticed? I've noticed that you and your colleagues only care about the rich in America and always look out for them at the expense of everyone else. And instead of helping the middle class, you want to eliminate the very programs that are helping them survive. Maybe if Republicans in Washington started to care a little more about the well-being of the 99%, President Obama wouldn't have to incessantly talk about their welfare. And the very, very ugly Fox so-called news. On this morning's edition of Fox and Friends, Talking Head Brian Kilmeade interviewed two little girls and sisters who had started a lemonade stand. And somehow Kilmeade turned what should have been a cute fluff piece into an idiotic attempt to attack the president. After asking some questions about the girls' lemonade stand, Kilmeade asked what they thought of the president's statement that businesses don't grow on their own. After all that, Kilmeade didn't even get the answer he wanted because the girls told him that while they did most of the work, they did get help from others. Now Fox News has done a lot of crazy things since it was born out of Rupert Murdoch's wallet, but playing on the innocence of little children just to promote your blatant political agenda, that is very, very ugly. Amazing. Charles in Alton, Illinois. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind today?
What was on my mind today, Tom? I got to say, I stand on the gun rights about like you do. You know, but the point is, they outlawed the Tommy gun back in, you know, the 30s or whatever.
Yeah.
And today we got guns on the street that make it look like a cap gun.
Yep.
You know, SKSs with armor-piercing bullets, you know, like you say, 100-round clips. It's just unreal.
Yeah.
And then the second point I got is about the church and the state, the separation of the church and the state.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime a man takes a stand, you know, and testifies, they have to, you know, put their hand on the Bible and raise their hand and swear to God.
Mm-hmm.
So right there in our judicial system, the state and the church is already hooked together as one.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, that's I see that as something that's largely symbolic and rhetorical, although I do agree with those atheists who are saying that, you know, the Constitution prohibits the merging of church and state, and therefore that should be illegal. Thanks a lot for the call, Charles. Well said. Thomas in Baltimore. Hey, Thomas, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Tom. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call, Tom.
Sure.
Hey, listen, if I go to the ATM machine, right, and get money out of the ATM machine,
right,
it gives me a receipt whether I got money in there or not. How come when I go to vote, I can't get a receipt for my vote when the same company, Babo, is responsible for the voting machines?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And here's an even better one. Why is it that the companies that make gambling machines in Las Vegas have to share their source code with regulatory agencies, and basically everything they do every step along the way is very, very carefully monitored, and yet the companies that make voting machines, nah, not so much. Which is more important,
exactly,
whether you're going to lose 50 cents at Vegas or whether you're going to vote?
Exactly. Could it be that they really don't know, they really don't want to know who's voting, or could it be that they really want to just steal people's votes like they've been doing?
Well, I think there's a fair amount of stealing of people's votes going on, and it's why, you know, we need to turn out in overwhelming numbers. Thomas, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. Mark in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Okay, yeah, there's two things I want to say. First of all, that guy Judson that you had on before,
yeah,
with the Tea Party,
yeah,
they banned me from their website according to my IP address because he was telling everybody on the website that there were no filibusters in the Senate when we had that Senate Treaty Pact that Senator Kyle filibustered against. And when I told everybody on the website, they banned me from their website.
Okay.
And number two, I'd like to know why nobody's talking about the guy that wants to be the commander-in-chief when he ran to France during the Vietnam War that I had a fight in, and I'm a disabled veteran, and he decided to have, you know, French baguettes and croissants, and he spent 31 months over in France.
Yeah, with a butler and a chef and a driver.
Yeah, and how many people do you think he changed from Catholicism to Mormonism?
Probably
round figures, none.
Well, it could be. I'm guessing he was probably a pretty good evangelist. He's clearly a good salesman. It's part of how he got rich. But Mark, your point is well taken. And I'm frankly, you know, I've been waiting for that shoe to drop. Although I guess President Obama is not, you know, he doesn't have military service of his own in his past, so he's not the guy to call out the other guy, you know. But it's pretty remarkable that. Anyhow, Randy in Smock, Pennsylvania. Randy, what's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Tom. My question is this. If Mike Terzai's quote is not proof of original intent of voter ID, what is?
Right. And just for our listeners who don't know what you're talking about, this is clip number 5, Shano. Here's Mike Terzai.
Voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania. Done.
He is a Republican from Pennsylvania, and it's like, you know, voter ID, which is going to end. And that's why I call I'm calling on the national media to insert the word suppression between the words voter and ID. Voter suppression ID laws is what they should be correctly called, because that's what they are. And I mean, this all goes back to Paul Weyrich, and you know where I'm going with that one, Shane. And so thank you for the call, Randy. Well said. This all goes back to the guy who founded the American Legislative Exchange Council. Now, keep in mind, virtually all these voter suppression ID laws in all of these states that have been passed were written by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. And ALEC was started by a guy by the name of Paul Weyrich. And here's what Paul Weyrich had to say back in 1980, talking to a church full of Republican Christians when Paul Weyrich was helping run the Reagan campaign.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Many of you have talked.
And that, and there, I don't know how George Bush popped in there, but next one in queue. Okay. There you have it. The guy who was the founder of ALEC, which is the author of these laws, saying, I don't want everybody to vote. Right. Edward in Clarkston, Michigan. Hey, Edward, what's up?
Yeah, just watching that clip about Paul Weyrich there. And you never mentioned that he says good government, too. What's wrong with good government?
Right.
You know?
He doesn't want good government. He wants government that he runs. Right.
So I was discussing with a distant relative on Facebook, via Facebook, about voter ID. And, you know, he was on vacation, and And he says, well, I had to show my, you know, license when I used my charge card, and I had to show my license here and show my license there. I said, well, great. Did I lose you?
Yeah, no, I'm listening.
Oh, sorry. But I said, yeah, well, that's nice. You own a car. You know, he's just a middle-class blue-collar guy. Mm-hmm. He says, you're lucky you own a car. You're lucky you have a charge card. I mean, he's middle-class out. He's Romney-esque out of touch,
right.
You know, in the middle class. I said, what about somebody that's disabled? They're in their house. They don't have a ride. They need to get to the DMV. And Scott Walker is, you know, closed half of them in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's...
Yeah, or somebody who's 70, 80 years old and, you know, 90 years old, whatever. Or somebody who's a student and they don't, you know, they don't have the money to buy a car. They're living on campus. Somebody who lives in a big city, you know, who is low income and has never had the need for a car because there's good public transportation in a lot of our big cities. At least a few of them there is here in Washington, D.C. I don't own a car anymore. And
yeah, I think there's just an attitude with, you know, just your regular middle-class person, though. They can't even look down and say, hey, how about these poor disadvantaged folks here, you know?
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Edward, thanks for the call. Les in Marrero, Louisiana. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Never watched your show before. Glad to talk to you. I just tuned in, and I see that you're talking about photo ID requirements for voting to be suppression. I'm wondering how you come up with that. That doesn't make sense to me.
Because among the Republican voting constituency of middle-class whites, you have about 2 to 3% of people who don't have these IDs. Among African Americans, it gets in the mid 20 range of all people who are eligible to vote don't have photo IDs necessary in many of these states. Among students between the ages of 18 and 24, it's in the high 20%. Among people who are over 70 years old who vote heavily on issues of Medicare and Social Security, which again are Democratic issues, you're pushing 30, 35%. Because the people who typically are voting Democratic are the ones who don't have the IDs, and the people who typically vote Republican are the ones who do have the IDs. That's why I say it's voter suppression.
Well, and my question remains, how is that suppression? Because
you're telling people you can't vote.
No, I'm telling people they can't vote if they can't say who they are.
Well, they can say who they are. They just don't have a driver's license. I mean, you know, this is pretty straightforward stuff. You're arguing for a return to essentially poll taxes or literacy tests. You know, prove to me that you should vote. I'm saying that's not how a democracy should work.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We need to be encouraging the vote, not discouraging the vote. Look at Australia. 98% of all their citizens vote. I mean, we're lucky to crack 50%.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy.
And the news is coming as well. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, is with us in the studio. Hey, Ellen. Glad to have you with us.
Yes, there's so much news today, I just don't even know where to start. But today, Governor Romney also addressed the veterans of foreign wars. He basically went after the president for the scandal on the National Intelligence League. He used Dianne Feinstein, who basically denied, well, she didn't deny. She said that she should not have speculated because the fact of the matter is she doesn't know the course of the leaks.
Wait a minute. I don't know what you're talking about
okay.
here.
So basically what happened is Dianne Feinstein said that that she thought there was somebody in the administration that was responsible for these security leaks.
The leaks being that Obama had killed Bin Laden and stuff, you mean the stuff that he was directing the kill list and stuff like that?
Well, that's right.
Okay.
Some of these sort of a myriad of security leaks.
Right.
So then Romney says basically in his White House there wouldn't be this kind of leak.
Right.
Like
dream on.
Yeah, exactly. So then they went after Dianne Feinstein, who basically said she thought it was coming from somebody in the administration. Well,
right.
You don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure out that somebody had that information.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, where they would have gotten it. But in any case, so then Romney takes the holier-than-thou attitude at the Veterans of Foreign War speech today.
Amazing.
It is.
Was he well-received?
Well, I was not there. But, you know, I think he was politely received. I think that from what I saw from the questions, it was then not a standing ovation by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. Well, you know, during Vietnam, he passed on his opportunity to serve. He went off to France, and he had a butler and a chauffeur and a chef and lived in a mansion for, you know, what was it, 30 months or
while
something
like that.
While
he knocked on doors.
Yes. As a Mormon missionary, he got a religious exemption, so.
Yeah, okay. So, now, very interesting. Today, Carolyn McCarthy, you know, she lost her husband on a train from a mass shooter. She's from New York.
Yes,
she's,
Congresswoman.
That's right. She said that she wants there to be a limit to how many magazine clips and whether somebody can order this huge amount of ammunition. She said, with 90 seconds... 71 people had been shot, 12 people dead, and the only reason there weren't more is because a particular piece was jammed. It took 90 seconds for the cops to get there, but she said there is no reason in the world that there needs to be this kind of ammunition sold, and that Second Amendment rights did not include this, she felt.
Yes.
Well, it's interesting. The president has not actually come out very tough on this, as you know, and today Mr. Boehner said... He said the White House is not going to push for any new gun laws, and I agree.
Well, so I think that's all going to happen. Everybody's afraid of the NRA.
That's right.
It's a tragic commentary
on
the state of affairs in America, but that's the fact.
Now, as you know, there was this there's this middle class tax extension that is supposed to be happening. And it's for people who are earning $250,000 or less as double filers or family and $200,000 or less as an individual. Well, the Senate Republicans are probably going to make that go down without the 60 votes necessary for cloture. Why? Because they think it should be higher. So therefore, they're going to let a middle class tax cut extension go by the boards and just because they want to demand that it's going to be higher.
It's going to be.
In other words, they want the limit raised to like 400 or 350.
Oh, they want richer people to get tax cuts.
That's right.
I see, but they're not going for the whole enchilada. They're not saying you have to include the billionaires and everything.
No. They're saying on this particular one, they're not even going to vote for that. Why can't they vote for that and then put in another bill?
Right.
No, they don't
want to be on the record.
Well,
duh. Okay, got it.
Exactly. Okay. Now, Crossroads GPS.
Carl Rove's little brain trust.
That's right. They are now a crew, the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. They are filing a complaint with the Federal Elections Commission against Crossroads. They are saying that they characterize political ads, which require disclosure to the Federal Election Commission, as issue ads. And they're saying, listen, it's very clear that they're not going to repeal the Affordable Care Act, decrease the budget deficit, and they're doing ads on this, and they're calling them issue ads, and they're really political ads, and so we want them to disclose.
Good luck with that. I mean, the problem is even if they get a favorable ruling, it'll be after the election.
It will be after the election. That's right.
Same with the IRS challenge.
And don't forget, the FEC is made up of six of one, six dozen of another. I mean, right. So you're not going to get anything. Okay. I'm sure you just tell me if we've already talked about this, about Bernie Sanders now saying that he came out with a report today saying billionaires are buying the 2012 election. They have a combined $195 billion in wealth, more than the bottom 43% of American households. And he lists all the people who have given money.
Whoa, no, I didn't cover that. I missed that.
Oh, yeah. He basically said that essentially the 60, that Sheldon Adelson says that he is going to spend $100 million defeating President Obama, $400 million the Koch brothers says they've pledged during the 2012 election season, and he lists everybody who is giving money and how much they've donated. The Marriott's giving $2 million to Super PAC. Harold Hamm is worth $11 billion. He's given almost $1 million.
This raises the question. If the argument the crew is making to the FEC is that these ads are electioneering and not issue ads, wouldn't you just be able to point to their donors who said we're giving this money to take down Obama as proof?
Well, I think we should give it to them. They have said that.
Yeah,
That's brilliant.
It seems like, you know, prima facie.
You are the most brilliant guy on the
original night. Next to you, Hill. Thank you so much. All right, tomorrow marks 1 year since the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau became a reality. We'll have a conversation with the woman who pioneered the project, Professor Elizabeth Warren, now running for the U.S. Senate in Massachusetts, plus the best of the rest of the news in your calls. And remember, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, tag your end. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.